Hello, welcome back to Seeking Scale. Andy, how's it going?
It's going well. Yeah, just been doing, again, some more house projects and getting ready for some ski trips. Haven't gotten out at all this winter and looking forward to that. I think we got a lot of snow coming this weekend in the Northeast, so hoping it'll be good. And yeah, just stay on top of work and getting ready for those fun trips. What about you?
Very cool. Very cool. Yeah, similar. Ran out today to the sporting goods store and picked up sleds for the kids because we're supposed to get, you know, our first nor'easter Saturday. So it'll be cool that a bunch of snow's coming and it's not during the school week because it's just a mess, but the kids will be off and we can go. Turns out we got really lucky in like the town we moved to. The sledding place is 3 blocks from our house. So we just walk down there and like the whole town is there sledding, like that the 2 days we've had a lot of snow so far. So it's really, really cool that we're so close and just dumb luck that we happened to move to this exact house. But yeah, man, all good on our front. Had two kind of shout outs to listeners. Jesse Henley on Twitter after our admin episode, I think that's what we called it, gave a shout out to Meryl from Bean Ninjas. Bean Ninjas is like bookkeeping and accounting service/software. And so I've known Meryl for a long time. She kind of ran in the productized service world. And they do a really great job. Actually checked out what they do for a couple of services that we're looking for. And then over email, shout out to Curran for commiserating with us. Had 4 emails marked unread for weeks relating to compliance and state filings. So yeah, definitely, like I think a lot of people feel our pain around like just the hassle of admin stuff. From my end, did onboard with Main Street, and looks like we'll qualify for some solid tax credits there. And the other interesting thing that I just want to update listeners on is they have something that they call procurement, which is like just a service that they run. And the spiel kind of from them is like, hey, we have a bunch of SaaS services that we buy every year, and we have negotiated really good deals on a lot of them. And so we can do that for you too. And similarly, they just take like a small percentage of the savings that they get for you. So we have a lot of things that we pay hundreds of dollars a month for. And I think that's kind of the minimum for them to be able to negotiate stuff. Like if you're paying $30 a month, they're just not gonna be able to do anything. But if you're, you know, $300-$500 a month, they can probably go in and negotiate with the vendor. So they're in there negotiating some stuff for us right now, which is cool. And it's nice. You just say like, here's my last invoice from Zendesk. Please go save us some money. And they have like kind of a, not a money back guarantee, but they're like, we're going to save you 3 times this target. And so they set a target for themselves and works out to where like cash flow and everything is really positive for them and for us. So yeah, so on board with them and that's all cool.
Yeah, I mean, it's like a higher touch profit well model where they're finding money for you. They're taking their cut, but I suck at negotiating in general. And so I could absolutely use some help there. And a lot of times I don't even know what to ask for. I don't know if it's okay to ask for something. I don't do that at all. And so this sounds like it could be great.
Yeah. And I think that like we are just at the beginning of where it makes sense. You know, like again, like if you're paying $100 a month, they're just not gonna be able to do anything. And even some things that were $200 a month on, they're like, you know, this is just not where we can really help. But if you're gonna come in and buy, like we went and bought Full Story at the end of the year. And we negotiated like an annual deal with them. And that was a hassle, but that's like the perfect thing that they could help with is say, hey, if you're going to go spend, you know, 10 or 20 grand on something for a couple of years, they can go and help you or converting from monthly to annual or adding seats or some kind of commitment. So other admin thing that really is just like something to get people thinking is like, we talked about Bench last week. I had a call with our accountant on Monday. And he was like, look, I love Bench. And he's the one that turned us on to Bench fucking 7 years ago when I started Podcast Motor. And he's like, you're outgrowing Bench and you're outgrowing cash-based accounting. It's time to think about moving to accrual-based accounting and a more sophisticated bookkeeping service. And I don't have any experience with them. I asked for a sales call and a demo and stuff, but pilot.com. is the service that he recommended just as like, you know, the next step from Bench. So that's the fun admin stuff that I've been up to and that I have to look forward to over the next couple months. But I mean, his argument for accrual-based accounting is like, you sell an annual deal. Like, you shouldn't recognize $5,000 in January. You should recognize it over the year. And similarly with expenses, like if you're paying for a year of full story, you shouldn't take all of that expense in December. You should allocate it over 12 months or whatever. And so it's just a more detailed and fine-grained accurate.
And I know you're not the CPA here, but like when they say you shouldn't realize that immediately, or you shouldn't take that expense up front, is it from a legal, like a tax law standpoint, or are they just saying this is a safer way of accounting? It gives you a better idea of like this is a liability because yes, you're getting the money now. It's going to be over 12 months. I guess in my head, these are things I haven't thought much about. So like, I can't wrap my head around just the downfalls of cash accounting. I get that it can get very complicated and messy if you have a very expensive product to deliver, if you have accounts receivable and you just have all these weird pay periods and it takes you like when there's slack in the system of when you're paying vendors, when you're getting paid by customers and all of that stuff, I can understand why getting a better handle on it makes sense. But in the SaaS world, I don't know. Like, I just feel like I have no idea. Like, what's your understanding of the benefits?
Yeah. So it's 100% that like, it's not wrong. And like the way that I've heard it explained from other founders is it's like, it's just more right to do accrual based accounting because it's just more accurate and like fine grained, right? Cause like, you're just seeing big chunks of money, right? Of like cash in and expenses, like even annual deals, you know, a $500 annual deal, like that you have not delivered that service all in January, right? So it's just not accurate. And so that's like the argument that he made to me is like, it's more for us and for our investors and for potential, you know, acquirers or partners if we have much more detailed numbers. And like, I think it's like a lot of these things at the kind of scale or level that we're at is like, it's not wrong to do things like the scrappy startup way, but maybe it's more right to do it this other way. And the other one that's like right in the same boat is like reporting sales tax on a state level. Like, it's one of those that like, it's 100% not required unless you qualify in a couple different ways. And those are if you have a physical presence somewhere, or if you cross like some revenue threshold, and it's like $100,000, right? It's like this, the lawsuit was like Wayfair versus North Dakota or whatever a couple of years ago. And that's what really put it like on the radar.
So this is something that is like very much been on my radar, the sales tax side of it. And so all I would just say for listeners is I think it's something to look into before you feel like you need to. It's not as simple. I don't think, Craig, you were saying this is like the blanket rule of $100,000, but it's every state has a different criteria for what classifies as having economic nexus in the state. Some have a dollar amount. Some have a number of transactions. Some have both. And some say you need to exceed both. Some say you just need to exceed one. And so in SaaS, it gets really, the transaction ones hurt us, especially when we're doing monthly billing, because a lot of times it'll be like 200 transactions in a year in one state gives you economic nexus. They don't care how much those transactions were for, it gives you nexus. And so all I would say is I think most companies at honestly, even half a million and up, there's probably a state that you're not aware of that you have it at, unless you're more enterprising, don't have that many customers. The more customers you have, the more likely it is you have some liability there. So we're really digging into this, that side of it. And to me, it's the reason why that's more important to us is because it's a compliance thing. It's a legal requirement. And I think we can, like, negligence isn't really a defense. If you're showing that you're putting your best effort, it's not as though they're going to be punitive with you, but there are penalties. And the bigger you get, the more likely it is for an audit. I think the chances of audits are relatively low, but in general, it's just why take the risk? And so, yeah, that is something we're looking at. So we've talking to TaxJar about that. The thing I still don't fully understand is
Stripe bought TaxJar. Our zip code data is in Stripe. TaxJar integrates with Stripe, but for some reason, we still have to build a custom integration with TaxJar to send them that information. So that's kind of a beside the point thing that I don't fully get, but regardless, we'll be looking into that. And do you mind if I jump back to what you were talking about before with accrual versus cash? So I guess this is something that I know I tend to fall far to the end of the spectrum where I'm just like, I just don't care. Because as I start spending more time, and really what I have been doing is just viewing myself more as a manager. And there are still plenty of things that fall to my plate and I will get done, but I'm trying to just minimize that, delegate more in this and that. But you can go down a never-ending hole on these kind of improvements and things like that. And it's the same, like, I know we could do a bit more if we had better analytics in the app, but at the same time, like, we don't have the bandwidth to act on it that much. And so I just always go to the other side of things where it's just like, all right, sure, this might be better. Is it a compliance issue? No. If this gives us more insights, do we have someone on this team who's going to get those insights? And then do we have a way to act on it? And we don't. And so those are the situations where, like, I'll always be like, all right, like, this, we'll just leave it like this for a while. And like, I'll go too long that way. But I'm just wondering, like, do you think it's something where the benefits are actually going to be realized or actually going to be worth your effort? Because this is definitely more of the working on the business kind of work. But I don't think all work on the business has the same value, just like not all marketing tasks have the same value, not all features have the same value, like that sort of thing. It's something that I've been fighting where I'm just like, wait, why am I spending time on this if we're not going to be able to do anything with it? So I'm just wondering if how you've thought about that.
I share your feeling like 100% about like who cares, right? If it's not wrong or illegal, like, I'm just not going to do it. But I really like our accountant. And I mean, like, the argument he made was that the more detailed, you know, arguably like more accurate financial data you have will let you do more with that information, you know, and that's, you know, a more sophisticated accounting or bookkeeping software will let you build reports that let you have accurate and timely data that you can then make budget and forecast decisions with about hiring and raising money and PE firms and all this kind of stuff. And that was really his argument. Is like, look, you guys are here. You're doing great. You're going to double this year. You're maybe going to raise more money, or maybe you're going to do something else. Like, you're going to need like really sophisticated financials to share with whoever you take the next step with. And that's the motivation for me. It's like, I personally am not into like all of that stuff, other than I want the business to be as big and profitable and great as it can be. And like, I see this as a tool to let us communicate with the people that can help us get there. Again, whether it's raising more money or partners or whatever. And that's just how I see it. Yeah, this is not for me, for sure.
Right. So that's where I think when you're starting talking about it, well, it could let us create these reports and better planning.
It's fancy graphs.
And yeah, but like, are you going to? Are you going to do that? But if it is the expectation of potential next steps for the company, I could see it, yeah, being better to do it now. I would probably just make sure that is the case. And then also would, if it's something where it's just, okay, we signed up for this other service, pay a bit more, pay the accountant a bit more, we get it done. And if I don't make reports, it's still, the data is still there for these other potential things. And sure, it's like a low cost, as far as time goes, decision. I would just be like, if this is going to drag me into something for weeks and weeks to get this sorted out and it's going to require more overhead for me, I would just, it would fall in the bucket of, yeah, I'm not going to do that.
Yeah. No, I mean, the other part of it is like, with like a part of this is like, we're going to have I think I might have talked about it, like some kind of like CFO in the company. And whether it's our accountant or whether it's Pilot or whether it's whoever, like, and I think the argument is like that person probably could do this with cash-based accounting, but like the argument for my accountant is like a more sophisticated bookkeeping service and like all this other stuff is the kind of data that a more sophisticated financial person that's going to be helping us make data-driven decisions will need so that we then get the value out of their services.
Mm. That makes sense. And I think, yeah, if you can get that high level person with it, that high level insight, then yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Because I think as we scale, it's just, these are the things that I don't want to have to be coming up with the strategy on. There are different parts of the business that I care about more, that I enjoy, that I want to think about, that like I'm fine not necessarily owning strategy forever, but having a lot of input there, that's okay with me. But there are other parts where it's just, yeah, okay, yeah, this sounds great. Can you go do that, please? Because I don't even want to have the idea. I don't want to deal with it. I don't know. I just feel like that's kind of where my head's been at recently, is just worrying that I will start taking on too much of the decisions when it's like we can delegate and we can have other people on our team help, but there's a pretty big difference between delegating a task and having someone take ownership over a core part of the business. I don't really think our company is fully there. I mean, I guess on models for Matt, I think we're close in a few areas, but I think it's that idea of just having someone really run with something and they check in with me, but it's there, the one on the strategy. That's what seems like the next level up from here. I don't necessarily think we're ready for it, but it's just something I've been thinking a lot about, where it's all these decisions that I have a hard time navigating because I don't know enough about the area. I don't get excited about the area, that sort of thing.
Yeah. So, okay. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and for me, just to kind of like wrap a bow on this one, like I look at this and the ability to have someone really help us with like financials and financial decision making is like having a personal trainer or a chef, you know, at your house or something. It's like, it is a thing that for me, a specialist should absolutely do and help you with. Like, and that's my, you know, helps against my bias and my shortcomings. And like, it's a nice part of our world to carve out and just have somebody own and have like monthly or quarterly kind of calls about like, hey, this is how you did, and this is the budget, and this is what we're projecting, and blah, blah, and then build the models out from there. And again, just hopefully have us make better analytical decisions instead of, oh, we have this much money in the bank. Let's go fucking figure out what to do with it, which has been what I've done up until this point.
This is obviously, like, for me, this is my biggest shortcoming by far, is the detailed finances. I've always made sure that we have money in the bank and the runway is fine, but I'm not doing a ton of analysis. I'm not really digging into it at that level. And yeah, so I'm excited to hear how it goes with you, because this is clearly one of those areas where if we could just have someone plug that gap, if we could get that sort of fractional CFO services, I feel like that could be big for us. But what I'm curious about for you is, are there other areas in the business where you'll be trying to plug gaps in a similar way?
Yeah, that's a tough one. I mean, I talk with our team a lot about like leveraging and scaling their time, you know, even like amongst the team and like with leadership. And they keep me honest about where I'm doing a bad job of that, or they think I'm doing a bad job of that. And I mean, I think the reality is there's some places I need to continue to step away from. There's some places I need to get more involved. And that's, I think that's just like, it's a natural cycle almost, is like, there's areas of business that need my help more than others. And that isn't always the same all the time, like sales, right? Like the last quarter, I spent a ton of time with the new sales guys. Now they're kicking ass, right? So it's like, I don't need to spend as much time there with them. Yeah. I mean, I think if I had to put a single name on a place that I'm spending a lot of time, it is like operations. And it is like operations almost outside of the really huge things that we typically think about, you know, it is like finance and fucking legal stuff, you know, and just because like we converted to a C Corp last year and we still have all this stuff that is there. And like, just like, that's just like some overhead. And then like, we've been spending a lot of time and energy on product and people in product on our team. And That's super interesting because it's kind of the same thing we were talking about with finances. Is like up until now, it's just been like, I want to build this because, you know, whatever, there's a squeaky wheel that's a customer or someone on our team that is saying we should build this thing. And so we should go build it. And now we're trying to get closer to like, put everything in the backlog and then let's score all these features for like impact and reach and new customers versus existing customers and all this kind of stuff. There's a really good framework that Intercom uses, and it's RICE. We'll link up in the show notes. Is RICE is the kind of scoring matrix that they use to decide how they build all their features. But so we've been working with Francois, our head of product, on building all that stuff out. And then like how that flows from like, if you think about product as like looking at the product roadmap on like a quarterly basis, how does that flow through to the dev team, you know? And then like a product gets spec'd and assigned and tested and all of that stuff. I mean, that is a really big thing from just like, I create a GitLab issue and assign it to a developer to like, he now really owns the roadmap of the product and I have a lot of say in it, but like there are a lot of other inputs to it because like I'm realizing that like, while I am a user and a podcaster, I'm not nearly as a power user as a lot of our customers. And a lot of people are using our platform in ways that I would never think of. And they're wanting things that I scoff at, you know, and say like, wow, that's crazy. I can't imagine why you would want that. But like, there's a lot of them. And so that's not wrong, you know? And so trying to make our product decisions more objective, so I'm not the like old crotchety bastard, like telling people to get off my lawn, and we're like continuing to make really good product decisions, you know, kind of that are beyond me.
Yeah. This is the big thing that I've been thinking about as I have been trying to take that step back to think about our processes and just how we're working. And our product process is definitely something that we need to improve. Matt, Ben, and I had a big conversation about it. And it's really one of Matt's goals for this quarter is not to solve it, but just make a big step in that direction. And it's, yeah, figuring out, okay, these are the areas the business needs to improve. And then it's figuring out, do we have the capability internally to make those improvements? On the product side, for building out the product process, I'm confident we do. Same with improving the support process. I feel like for us, it's the ops in finance side that we can keep the train on the tracks, but that's about it. It's probably not running on time, and we can throw whatever other metaphors in there that we want, but it's just like, those are the areas where I think it's just clear. It's getting clear to me that there's needs to be some, we have a talent gap in the sense of that's just none of our strong suits, and we don't have the bandwidth for it, even if it was.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think there's upstream considerations, you know, like planning and scoring and ranking those things, and then how they get into the product process, and then like the actual getting it done, you know, of like development that is like to be considered. And that ends up being kind of like a lot of people, you know?
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, I know we talked about Francois becoming the head of product. How long ago was that?
A few months. Yeah.
Okay. How has that been going? And I guess from his perspective, like how have you felt? How do you feel things are going? How do you think that he sees it?
I think I don't want to speak for him, I guess, but like, I know he really likes it, right? I mean, he came in just as a designer and then he did some front end work for us. And now like he's been with us so long and worked with me on product stuff long enough to where like he just really has a good sense of kind of where we're going just in general, you know? And so it makes a lot of sense. And like, he's been like a business owner and all this kind of stuff. So he gets both sides of it. So it's good. I think the challenge is it's different, you know, like we're talking about a really different way that we make decisions, and it's definitely ruffling some feathers, you know, because like, hey, why can't Craig just decide this thing? And it's like a lot of decisions where things get abstracted away from us as founders that I think there's questions and uncertainty from everybody around it, you know, and from him probably too. Like if you asked him, he'd probably say, yeah, you know, like a lot of this is a mess because I'm making decisions and I'm not sure if they're the right ones. And I think if I had to say something in general, I would say like, that may be the thing I'm learning the most is that like setting really super clear expectations from us is something that I don't give enough like credit to, you know? Like, I always have this saying that like being honest is the most kind thing you can do to someone, right? Like just being honest. And like, if it's not great news, like that's still really good for someone. But like, I think there's many layers to that. And I think that we as people who are not assholes tend to sugarcoat and avoid and gloss over a lot of things. And I think that if you look at really high quality operation companies, you know, the Apple and all these just really capital efficient, mega wonderful companies, like they have the things in place to where everything is super clear so that like a person doesn't need to be an exceptional human being to do a really good job in a role, you know? And I think that like, that's what we rely on a lot as early stage founders, right? Is like, I'm not going to figure this out. I just need a superstar to come in and like just do things and assume that, and I'll assume everything is right. And like, as we grow, I think I'm getting more towards like, I want to be where we can get closer to the spectrum of like, just hire anyone and they would be great in the role. Of course, that's never going to be the case because you need exceptional people. But like right now, like we're hoping for unicorns a lot.
And I agree. I guess the caveat I would have there is we had a very similar discussion internally where it's, as we're talking about the product process, we're saying, okay, like what steps are needed? Who can do what steps? And yeah, we're fortunate that we have a very strong team in that area, but we don't want to build a process where if any one of those pieces is missing, it all falls down. And so I think for us, it's building something that, like you're saying, you don't have to be this 10x engineer or whatever else to make it work. But we still are going to do our best to get in the best people into those roles. And I think that's kind of the thing. But it's more just making it so that that's not holding it all together, because that's really how we've gotten to where we are, is we have a team that's able to wear a lot of different hats and figure things out and all of that. And that's been needed, but everyone's getting a little stretched thin. And it's saying, okay, from here, let's just get clearer on steps of the process. For me, a lot of it too is just making sure we actually follow it. Because when it gets busy, it's easy to just step in and be like, all right, let's just do it differently this time. It's fine. The next week, we'll go back to how things were doing, how we meant to do things. And then it's going to be busy again, and you're just not going to do it. And that's where I've dropped the ball a lot, is having a decent idea of the process, but whenever things get hectic, just defaulting to, all right, let's just fly by the seat of our pants a bit more, and maybe next quarter we'll clean it up. So it's trying to be a little bit more disciplined about that. And then the honesty, the clarity part is big, but it's a lot, and I feel like we're making progress. How are you feeling about where you guys are at on all this?
Yeah, same. Like it's arguably like not super exciting. You know, I think that's one of the challenges and why a lot of us neglect this for a long time, is it's not as exciting as designing product or, you know, futzing around with workflow automations and drip. But like we've said a lot, like arguably like people are the most important thing. And I think as you grow, like people and enabling people to be successful is more and more important all the time. And so it's just where I should be spending a lot of my time. I think both of us probably. So, and I give myself a lot of like slack on it too. It's like, it's not perfect, but it's better than it was yesterday. And so like, that's a win, right? It doesn't have to be perfect tomorrow, but like, if we can just make it a little better every week, then like, that's huge. And over time, that'll compound to be something that's really awesome, because like, it's not a race. It's not a sprint, you know? It's probably not a marathon either, but it's not like, it doesn't have to be better this month. So
do the EOS integrators exist? I feel like, I don't know. I hate the title of visionary in the EOS entrepreneurial operating system, like methodology, because it feels like all highfalutin and like, but it's like the one that comes up with the strategy, the idea is to me, like, that's just fun. In the actual doing things is not as fun. And it just blows my mind that there are people who might think the opposite. But if anyone out there fits that mold, please let me know. Because that integrator role is definitely something that I think we don't naturally fit into, but it's getting more and more important.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So if you're an integrator, reach out, shoot us a message, podcast@seekingscale.com.
Just tell to us tell all about us it. That you exist. Yeah.
Take a picture. Awesome. Andy, it's good to catch up as always. And folks, thanks for listening.
Thanks, everybody. See ya.